thank y'all so much for again coming and being a part of this. I feel like I need to start by saying, aren't we so white? And that's good. We do have some ladies in here. Very glad that you're here. That is wonderful. Hello, my name's David Fraze, and I'm a white dude. Now, why do I start like that? I work at Fuller with a lot of their initiatives, and we have a real cool one coming up called the 10x10. I don't even want to spoil it because it's as close as I've ever been to a restoration movement type feel. I never even say that word, so it's kind of cool to be able to say that word because I'm with my tribe. You know what restoration movement means. That's not really a word in Christendom, which is kind of disappointing. So a reformation moment where everyone gets together and started about, let's see, 4 years ago with 40 of us from diverse backgrounds, and we started looking at discipleship of teenagers. We met a couple of months ago, and this is really odd. Protestant, Catholic, and Orthodox, all in the same room, black, white, and tan, male, female, trying to figure out the things we can agree on so we can help stop the million young people, that's the new number, that just walk away from faith. But in that, there are some things that I typically do for Fuller. I write, I present, I still do some presenting, but it was odd, and I felt something was different, so hopefully you do this as a leader. I ask people that I respect to basically evaluate and say, okay, what do I need to know about myself? And so I called my friend Jake and Kara, and I said, hey, I just want to have a candid conversation. This is odd, you know, I'm 53, I really don't have any ego in the game, but I feel like I'm somehow not being used the same as I have been in the past. And they're like, well, we'll think about that and talk to you. And they sent a great, beautiful email back. And here's what they said. We have a lot of you. You know, you are a white, conservative church background, male. And then they said, and you coach football. I'm like, well, what does that have to do with anything? It's like going, it's just stereotypical of what a lot of people think of when they think of youth ministry in the South is you love football, you come from a conservative church, you're a white male, and we have all of those voices. And only those two people could tell me that. It's a long, beautiful letter. It wasn't making me feel bad about who I was, but the reality is, in diversity, and if you want to hear diverse voices, they have my voice at the table. And part of me at first, just to be honest, I'm like, well, I've been doing this for 32 years, and I have all these experiences, and I walk as salt and light, alien, stranger. You know, I'm being a blessing. You know, I'm trying to live a good life. Like, and that's what I'm thinking in my head at first, but I just needed them to say, Dave, we have that voice. And you're very much a part of everything that we do. No power is taken away, and you're a part of this, but we need to listen to others as well. That's that diversity discussion. When I work with the Cowboys, I am the minority. It's amazing how sensitive we are about diversity issues. But when you work with a team, if anybody ever had a team experience, I don't care if it's a theater team or a band team. By the way, band? Where are my band people? Y'all guys are nuts. Okay, people always make fun of sports, but this is so not diverse. But band people are crazy. That is so competitive. And the first time I saw a tuba player running around the school for PE credit, how do you get PE credit for band? Anyway, I sidetrack. But we check all of the, if you've been part of that, in order to reach a goal, it's an amazing, beautiful thing that happens because it doesn't matter what color you are, whether you're poor or whether you're rich or everybody's kind of going for one goal, and it's really kind of neat. And that's been a lot of my experiences of life, even in youth ministry, that's been very diverse and being in very diverse climates. I grew up in a very diverse climate. I went to a diverse school. I was a middle-income kid, so I didn't go, you know, I always had color around me. And all of us, we had the weird female thing growing up in Church of Christ. In fifth grade, you could no longer pray, you know. So that was the age of accountability, and then you went to the nursery and we waited on the Lord's table. I mean, we had those awkward conversations about that. I knew something was different. But we always feel very uncomfortable about that discussion. So last summer, we were checking kids in at the Star, and there's two places we do cowboy camps, at the Star and AT&T, and people are crazy, okay? They really are. You put on that blue star, and they're like, oh my gosh, and they try to look at me. I'm like, I didn't play pro. I went pro in academics. They're always trying to size you up, and there's long lines because they want to be the first one in just in case they see Dak still practicing inside type stuff. But I did a mistake. We give people a band. The parent gets a band, arm, you know, wristband. The kid gets a wristband, and they're supposed to match because you get your kid back at the end of the day, right? Well, I checked a couple in, and the wristband didn't match. And the mother started panicking, but she didn't want to call me out because I was the only white dude. There was black dude, Dave, black dude. And so I went to my boss, Danny, and Danny's like, so who did this? Which one of those guys did this? Because we are going to make fun of each other, right? It's going to be awful. And she didn't want to say. She goes, well, it's, well. And so finally he goes, the white dude? And she goes, yeah, it was him. And I'm like going, why are you so racist towards me, Danny? So we started joking about going, just because I'm white, you're doing this in front of these hundreds of people. He goes, well, yeah, well, you're white and the rest of them are black, so it had to be you. That's why I said white dude. And so we're laughing, and everyone, they just puckered. They're like going, can we be laughing about this in 2022? And we were very comfortable with that because we'd had the conversations. But if you start talking about diversity, it's a long spectrum of things, right? We talk about color. We talk about gender. Now we're talking about gender fluidity things, right? And it's very awkward. I did find out, working with FCA for a number of years, I had to write the Title IX policies and look into all the Title IX. And I realized the Office of Civil Rights, sometimes as a conservative, I'm thinking, well, they're just always on the side trying to get conservatives. But there's actually case law where someone of Christian persuasion was also, because of their diverse opinion, were hated on, and OCR actually jumped in and protected them. So they're trying to, in a lot of ways, provide a blanket for all peoples. But now OCR, that Office of Civil Rights, will step in, and they will prosecute a lot of different things that, in my core, I'm like, well, that didn't happen when I was a kid. And it's awkward for leaders. Am I speaking the truth here? So I'm going to give some sharp crayon manila paper moments, and I'll explain that metaphor because I like it. But the good, bad, and the ugly. I don't know why I have pictures of Clint Eastwood in this press. That's my second one. It just kind of hit me. I'm like, I guess I'm having Clint Eastwood moments. Somebody tell me the good about diversity. Huh? Different viewpoints. Absolutely. Now, we are so glad, and that was a woman that spoke. I want to say that for the table. A woman just said different viewpoint. We've always listened, and I think hopefully more now that the voices of some of the underrepresented individuals have come to the table. And I'm just going to say, in our movement, it's caused a lot of friction because we look at this idea of male headship. Here's what's interesting. If you just read the Bible, I was taught my whole life that's the way God designed it. But then I read chapter 3 of Genesis. Has anybody ever just read it, just to read it? When it talks about the curses, not the curses, but the consequences. The land was cursed, Satan was cursed. The consequence for a woman is your desire will be for the man, and he will rule over you. And then when Paul starts talking about there's neither male nor female, slave nor free, because the cross, something changed at the cross. But I hear a lot of people going, well, male headship is God's design. Well, according to Genesis 3, it's part of the consequence of the fall. Just throwing that out there for the tape audience to be angry and study it further. You can do that when you're a scholar. This is in need of further study. But that's why some people are thinking, okay, have we relegated even the voice of women and not listened to them? But if you've ever been an elder or a deacon, and you're a deacon because your wife was running some ministry, but she was a woman and couldn't run it, so we had to have a man over it, but the woman was leading it. I had a lady named Mary who knew where every single paperclip was in our supply room. She was the runner of the supply room. Everybody knew it, but Foy had to be the deacon, even though we have scriptural book, chapter, and verse for that. So I'm just muddying up the water. The good is we finally have an official female perspective on most of the stuff that we do, and it's been glorious. We just don't hide it. But sometimes girls have had to go, you know, just kind of sneak their opinion in. It's made us stronger and better. There are some things I just don't understand as a man. Anybody with me? I just don't understand. Steve, yes, Steve. What do you not understand? Yeah. It is silly. And again, I'm not meaning to poke fun of and make fun of anyone. I mean, it's just the reality is the good has been we have different voices. What are some other goods? Yes. I had therapy today with Luke. Hi, Luke. And we're on the same board, and I've come back to serve a second term with the Children's Home of Lubbock. I'm like, so tell me about yourself. And then I turned therapist for a moment. He's like, dang, what in the world? What are you doing? I think he's a very impressive guy. And from where he comes from, he adds so much depth to that board because of his story. I think of Rose Johnson, an African-American woman that I sit next to that I won't mess with. We went to college together. She scares me. You know Rose. She's gone through a lot of just being a single mom, basically, because her husband died. And so she has that loss. She has African-American eyes. It's been a beautiful thing for our board and our university. Somebody else. The good. Mm-hmm. We even sang it as a kid. Red and yellow, black and white. They red. Yeah. Jesus loves all the little children until they ate, you know, the age of accountability, and then it's just the men. Now, we've changed it. And you know why we're laughing? Because it's good to look at that and laugh at it so we won't cry. Okay, I get that. But we're becoming more diverse in that, and it's a really good thing. What's the bad? Oh, yes, it is. It's very messy. Because we're human beings, and I have a lot to say, this is kind of the bad kind of goes into the ugly. And when you're on a board, it's very hard to reach a conclusion and say, as my friend Scott Cormode says at Fuller, this will not undo us. It's a great thing to remember, especially in our fellowship. If you don't agree with, you know, let's name something ridiculous we've split over. Does anybody want to do that? Where's Bobby? Too bad, Bobby left. I think my favorite has been hand clapping, and we're really bad at it. We clap at the weirdest, you know, words are not enough. I don't know why we clap there. We try to look for ways to be naughty and clap. Clapping was something that we felt like was adding something. And some churches split over that. It got bad and it got ugly. Because what we do is we have our opinion, our viewpoint, our perspective. And especially if you're new to the party and you feel like, well, nobody's heard me, so therefore I'm going to, you know, really put my foot down. And that happens also. It's just our human condition. It's hard to live in community, but is it worth it? I think the good outweighs the bad and the ugly. And some of these things, you're like, okay, we have to be diverse and we have to do all those things. When we feel like we're being forced into anything and it becomes a matter of policy, it becomes a matter of social push, all of us push back. One of my great friends and a great blessing of Lubbock Christian University right now is a guy named Milton Lee, who is African American, and I think he would rather be called black, and he is the president of the NAACP in Lubbock, Texas, and he's more conservative than Jimmy and I put together. Goes to a very conservative church. And he's been the biggest blessing to have in class. He's 70-something years old. He wanted to get his degree. And it's fun when you're talking about diversity issues and you're talking about culture and you have all of these 20-somethings and they're like, well, we should do this and this should do this and we've never done this and, you know, we're the woke generation. And Milton's back there going, he's just laughing. And I'm like, Milton, just wait just a second. And then I unleash him. Okay, Milton. And I tell the students before he talks, he's going to say something that you're going to write on a t-shirt. It's that good. And Milton starts telling history, starts telling what's been done before these kids were ever born, because diversity today could be complicated because these students in particular that are your younger employees believe that no one's ever dealt with gender equality, race equality, gender, same-sex equality because they've been looking at this thing. A lot of them do not know the history that's what's become before them. So it's like we're starting over. So when I teach strategic issues in the family, and we look at family dysfunction and function, I show clips of All in the Family. And it's so interesting. So like, they can't say that. George Jefferson cannot say the N-word on TV. And I'm like, he did. Well, Edith has every, she could go work if she wants to. And I'm like going, Archie didn't like it. Well, they're talking about religion. And Jesus is not that. You can't. I'm like, dude, that would be cut so fast. Do you realize that? But if you look at the creators, Rob Reiner and those said, here's what we tried to do with All in the Families. We tried to bring all these diverse viewpoints together and all of their diversity so that people would laugh at it, take a step back, and think. And so when I play that, they're like, wow, so we've had this conversation before? So sometimes it's important to know our history running up into diversity, okay? And it does matter. You know this. The Southeast is different than the West. The West is different than the East Coast and West Coast. Middle America is different. Everybody understands diversity is strange that way. I did not know racism, okay? Again, I wouldn't have recognized it because of where I was raised. Again, I'm a white dude, so I didn't understand a lot of things I understand. But when Jimmy and I were students at LCU, I had no clue of the diversity problem in Lubbock, Texas. 20 years behind the curve. They were shutting down an all-black school when I moved there in 1987. Jimmy, am I making this up? Dunbar shut down. And it was really strange to me. I said, didn't we do this in the 60s? And then my best friend at the time was Carl Latson, who was very black. He came from El Paso, okay, which is kind of diverse. I came from Dallas, and we started making fun in chapel about rap music takes no talent. So I did the ugliest white man rap you've ever heard in your life. And I walk outside, and the basketball team was angry at me because it was their music. I'm like, what are you talking about? So my best friend's a black dude. And I was raised with around rap music. That's our music. And that's when I started listening and realizing that the black population in Lubbock, which I think is now 4 to 6%, doesn't feel as comfortable in Lubbock as other populations. First time I ever noticed it. So, again, I'm just looking at, am I making any of this up? Am I making any of this up? It was odd. So diversity has been something we've dealt with, and it has the good and the bad and the ugly, and we've dealt with it really wrong. I wish I could play you a lot of these episodes. I love The Office. If you don't watch The Office, it's therapy for you and your team. You'll find every member. It's very inappropriate. This is the second episode. And somebody came in because Michael Scott told a Chris Rock story, and it's very inappropriate. Every time you watch The Office, where's my Office fans? It makes you feel yucky. You know, like, dude, this would be, if you're an HR director, it's like, this guy literally would be in your office all the time, like in the show. And he hates the HR director, so he decided he was going to take over the Take-Two approach to diversity, and he was going to be Martin Luther King Jr. because he had a dream about diversity. And of course, he pushed it too far because he didn't handle it the right way. So I think it's significant of how we step into these waters. And one is just to look again at our past. You could find a bunch of these. These are the major movements. Really started with 1948, the desegregation of the armed services. The black soldiers came back. They didn't feel respected. And we desegregated the military. It was a very difficult time. Does anybody know the number one decorated unit in World War I? World War I, they were called Harlem Hellfighters. And they had to fight for the French because we wouldn't let them fight for us. Very highly decorated group. An African-American preacher told me that, and I researched them. I'm like, oh, my word, I never knew. The Harlem Hellfighters. So that was a big deal in our culture, Order 9981. Then we had the Civil Rights Act of 1964, race, color, religion, sex, or national origin. I talked to Milton about this, and I've talked to, you probably remember Coach Bacon over there at Richland, some of my older African-American friends. And Milton, as an NAACP representative, believed it stopped short because it wasn't totally inclusive of everything. And it was more of a kind of a little bit of a nod towards stuff. Around this same time, and this kind of woke me up, was the Affordable Housing Act, which is very cynical. Because in my mind, as a white dude, I'm like, well, dude, you got civil rights. It's awesome. But the Affordable Housing Act was interesting because in order to live in one of the housings that would be more affordable, you couldn't have a husband or a man in the home. And forever, as a, you know, a person who worked with students, I'm like going, where's all the black fathers? What's going on here? And I thought it was urban legend. So I asked, I'm like, what's going on? They're like, well, we had housing, but you couldn't be an intact family in order to have this housing. So the dads put their families in there and they'd sneak up and do different things. But basically, some of our earlier steps to provide affordable housing actually divided and split up homes. Am I making this up? Just stuff that we got to look at. So diversity, when you look at how do we peel back the curtain and look at it, there's just been things that have happened that have caused more damage to the families we're trying to save than help. And to be fair, both sides do it. All groups do it because, again, we're human and we look for power and control, and we do that. But there's some things when you just look at diversity and, well, why are people so upset? I got to take my perspective as a white male, even though I grew up lower middle income and we had black families in our neighborhood, there was still another side of the track growing up. I just didn't really understand it because we all went to school together. That's just reality. Okay, that's our history. 1987, Workforce Secretary of Labor William Brock commissions Workforce 2000. Diversity industry is born. We started double down on that. I graduated from high school in 87. Way to go. Investigations. We started looking at that, and money and Pinterest reveals that only 12% of their female engineers are female. And as a male, I'm like going, well, get a female. Just go get a degree. But then you start realizing, when you look at it, and you started hearing these words, glass ceilings. You've heard that there's only so high you can go up. So if you're, again, a white male like me, you're like, well, what's the deal? But it's just kind of part of our evolution and history of diversity. Google releases first diversity report, becoming the first major tech company to do so. Now, 74% of companies claim to practice diversity hiring. 18.75% of software engineers are women. 7% of STEM workers are African American, Hispanic, despite making up 28% of the population. Again, that kind of matters where you're from, because what we found out from the diversity that we gathered around recently for that 10 by 10 study, our world is becoming, in the United States, a lot more colorful than white, and that's changing very rapidly. So the future of growth for our companies and for organizations will not look like they've always looked like if we want to grow, because it's not representative of the population we are servicing. I'll stop there for a moment. Comments, questions? The good, bad, and ugly, do you feel it stirring inside of you? Because you're like, what does all this mean? I've stood in a meeting where a man from Hispanic background works with a church planting organization in New York, and he's one of the leaders of the 10 by 10. It was a really awkward moment because Lilly Foundation, this group called Pine Tops, paid over $250,000 to bring all of us together to L.A., no cost to us. They're bringing us together to come up with this idea of how to disciple kids. And here is this Latino man looking at the donors in the back going, here's what's so funny. I've been in this same situation scrapping, and I've not left my church. I ain't got no money, but I see these white churches trying to go into the inner city all the time. They throw their money away. They can't last. They leave. Why can't I have any of your money? And I'm like, don't look at him. Don't look. Don't look around. That was one of our first meetings. And I just watched a woman who leads, Kara, she wouldn't mind me saying this, Kara is one of the top 40 under 40 leaders a few years ago by Christianity Today. She is a powerful, wonderful woman. And with tears in her eyes, she realizes, I'm the one helping lead this, but I realize I have to give this away. If this is going to succeed, one of you have to take this. Because I just don't understand it. This is a woman saying that, saying we need somebody of color to lead. That was a very bold move. That's all happened like in the last 4 years, and that happened in the last 2 weeks, 3 weeks. So diversity, good, bad, and ugly, that's around us. So what do we do about it in the workplace? First of all, we're very polarized. Let's just try this. How many of y'all would have McDonald's fries over Wendy's fries? Where's my McDonald's fry people? Yeah, you probably still have some under your car seat, right? That happens. They live forever, okay? Right hand will be Chick-fil-A. Left hand will be Church's Chicken, okay? How many of y'all are Jesus Chicken? Chick-fil-A? How many of y'all are Churches? Okay. Jimmy and I will go eat Churches. I've got to try that sandwich. Okay. Let's see. Mountains or beach vacation? Mountains? Where's my beach? There you go. That's, again, why I have skin cancer. We are so polarized on these issues. One of the gifts, again, we have of Mr. Lee in class is he has discussions. He knows how to visit. And this, he's 70-something years old, and he knows how to work politics. He knows how to work on some issues that are very deep in Lubbock. But people like him. He has a weird sense of stepping into a room and automatically you're like, I don't care what this guy says. He could tell me to go to Churches over Wendy's or over whatever. I'll give it a shot because Milton said it. It goes back to faith in the workplace. If we're so polarized to say this will never happen and these people will never be here, and you know, that's bad and ugly. The good is, how can we occupy the same spaces and increase our diversity before it's forced on us? Because I do believe it's a godly plan. In Revelation, the picture we see of the church is every tribe, every tongue, every nation gathers around the throne. So let's just get a head start, right? So how do we do it? Show you a couple of videos that I think are awesome. Tell me what the point is. This is from a church with a creative arts team.
It's so easy to place people in boxes. Drawing lines, creating sides. There's us. And there's them. Those we feel comfortable around. And those we don't. There are those of us with many chapters. And those just starting their own stories. There's the well-to-do. And those doing what they can. There are those we share something with. And those we don't seem to share anything with.
Welcome, and thank you for coming today, guys. Today I'm going to be conducting an experiment where I'll ask you a series of questions. Now, these questions will be very personal questions, and for us to get a true result, I need you to be completely honest with how you respond. The first question I have is, who in here was the class clown? Who is never on time?
And then there's us. We who have tattoos. We who feel lonely. We who have been bullied. lead others. We who are madly in love. We who have overcome great adversity. And there's the lucky ones, whose team won the championship this year. Created in the image of God. And as one body, we stand together, united as one under His grace.
Seen and then the unseen, and people, you start to see that we have the similarities. Yeah, we all have the struggles. My wife beating cancer is like, every time I get to that point, I'm like, oh, she would have been in that group. It's, look at y'all, look at you. It's amazing to see what happens just with a little bit of connection. How many of y'all, it was kind of a little emotional just to watch that. Yeah. And some of you may feel emotional, maybe on one side, because you're like, I would love to be a part of a place that is seen like that. And it may not be skin color. It may not be gender. It may be people need to know I struggle. And once that happens, there's a kinship. Steve and I don't see each other very often. When we do, it goes deep really fast, because we've had incredible conversations at transition points in our life. Or we just sit and we just like, this is me and I'm undone, I don't know what to do. And so the first person I walked into this room, literally walked into Steve. I wanted him to know that I'm here, and I just ran into the back of his chair and then just sat there like a dummy, because that's what I do. And he's like, hello. And that's why he hugged me so long, because Steve is my friend. And that's awesome. I want you to watch another one. This is my favorite beer commercial, by the way.
I would describe my political views as the new right.
I say that I'm left.
Feminism today is man-hating.
I would describe myself as a feminist, 100%.
I don't believe that climate change exists.
We're not taking enough action on climate change.
I think it's about time these people got off the high horse and started looking for credible problems that actually exist.
It's absolutely critical that trans people have their own voice.
That's not right. You can't, you know, you're a man, be a man, or you're a female, be a female.
Women do need to remember that we need you to have our children.
Could I be friends with someone that says a woman's place in the home?
Right, okay, well, I'm an expert at flat packs. If you have any trouble, just watch me.
So it looks like I've got your instructions here.
I think so.
Let me help you.
Let's have just that bit there.
Describe what it is like to be you in 5 adjectives.
Okay. Frustrating.
Dedicated.
Opinionated.
Lucky.
Ambitious.
Offensive.
Solemn. I have ups and downs.
Strong.
I don't want to say attacked. Misunderstood.
Name 3 things you and I have in common.
We're both male, we're both confident, and we're both loudly spoken.
We know each other better than people who've known each other for 10 minutes should.
You seem quite ambitious and positive, and you've got this really, got a glow. Do you know what I'm saying? Your aura's pretty cool.
I'm sensing. Are you former military or something?
People have said that, but there is no there is no history. So are you then?
Ex-military?
Yeah. If you're ex-military, I'm very proud of you already.
Well,
I grew up in a bit of a rough state. I've experienced homelessness. I've known what it's like to have absolutely nothing.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm definitely most grateful just for life.
We've only just met, but I think you're the sort of person that would listen to me and we'd have a discussion rather than an argument.
Yeah, you could hang out with, man.
Let's go. Mind chance?
Goodness sake!
You're right, mate.
Fitter than I look.
Perfecto.
Oh, yeah.
There you go.
So basically, I think we just bought a bar.
Yeah.
Okay.
Here you are.
Each take a bottle and place it on its corresponding markings on the bar.
Attention, please now stand to watch a short film.
Feminism today is definitely an excuse for misandry, man-hating.
If somebody said to me that climate change is destroying the world, then I'd say that is total piffle.
So transgender, it is very odd. We're not set up to understand or see things like that.
I am a daughter. A wife. I am transgender.
I feel like the battle for feminism definitely isn't done. The fight is never going to be over, if I'm honest with you.
You now have a choice. You may go, or you can stay and discuss your differences over a beer.
I'm only joking.
You happy for a second, Ed?
Well, I'm having a drink.
I'm having a drink.
Yeah.
I want to discuss.
Beer.
Yeah, beer and discuss.
Cheers.
At the end of the day, mate, I've reaching out to
people,
yeah.
And, you know, even if you wanted to convince people about your point, the productive thing to do would be to sit
down and have a beer. Just engage.
I've been brought up in a way where everything's black and white, but life isn't black and white.
Yeah, I'm just me.
Yeah. Smash the patriarchy.
I'll give you my mobile number, you give me yours, and we'll keep in touch. I'd have to tell my girlfriend that I'll be texting another girl. She might be a bit upset with that, but I'll have to get round that.
I'll have to tell my girl that she'll have to lump
it. Thoughts, reflections. Did anybody sacrifice what they believed about any issue? What happened? Because she wouldn't mind me talking about it. Sally Gary's a friend and wrote a book on affirmation. She was a woman who helped a lot of kids in my youth group and probably your youth ministries too, just think about kids who struggle in certain areas with gender identification. And then she got married and wrote a book about it. And she's my friend and she knows I don't agree. And she wouldn't agree with me, but after a camp, we met in Dallas, and I said, hey, let's go have coffee. It's a 2-hour conversation. She's a dear friend. And there were a lot of tears and a lot of just, man, I love you too. And she knows and I know, but it was that moment. You don't have to sacrifice what you believe to love. And to be salt and light, to be an alien and stranger, even when you are pretty solid on your ideas and they're solid on theirs. Just something to think about. So, sharp crayons. I didn't have, again, growing up, lower middle class, the first of the year, I didn't get this box of crayons. I got the 16, which is the minimum. It didn't have the sharpener inside, but that there is something magical, okay, if you're old enough to realize, if you have a creative brain like mine, if people gave you sharp crayons, what go with sharp crayons? Manila paper. Do whatever you want to. And that's what we got as a treat. I know, it was weird. We were an overcrowded school. We did have a playground which was made out of construction tunnels from I-35. But other than that, it was awesome to be able to have, we had a stack of manila paper and a sharp crayon. It's like, it's free time. And I want you to have that metaphor as we try to think about some very practical things, just tools that I'd like to give you to think about, these sharp crayons, some tools that you have. One is the tool of listening. And by the way, if you looked at that and go, oh my word, it's a rainbow. Now, that's just colorful, different crayon looks. That's why I did that. No agenda. But if you think that's an agenda, that'd be an interesting part about your listening. It's hard for me to listen when I'm passionate about something. How about you? I had a friend who, in front of my daughter, who's in theater, so theater is historical as far as being inclusive, special, especially of gender differences, one of my best friends just went off in the car, never reading Sally's book, never understanding what's going on, saying, I don't have to read the book, I don't have to know her, she has an agenda. I said, she doesn't, you don't know her. And I was just kind of trying to calm him down, and my daughter's listening to everything. And I was all calm. And later, we were staying at a hotel, our two families were, and I walked into the room, and my daughter hugged me, and she goes, now I understand. Because she knows where I stand on things and what I teach, but I keep telling her, but I'm a bridge person, you can love and disagree. And she goes, I understand now. She goes, thank you for what you did. She just held me, which is really odd to be held by your daughter, you know, like, thank you. It's a tough position, but to just listen to people. Women, different genders, different races, different income levels, and just to see the way the world is from their eyes. Some of us in our fellowship are second or third generation. We've gone to the same schools, we've done the same things, and we washed and repeated, and we've led like that. But we haven't had a world with cell phones. It's such a connected, again, 3.0 world, and we have to listen. Another is perspective taking. I saw Josh Ross do this at Pepperdine. I think it was awesome. He took two people on the stage, and he said, okay, what do you see? Go ahead. What do you see in that bottle? What is it? It's an empty water bottle. What kind of water bottle is it? Okay, what kind of company made this plastic water bottle? Dasani. Okay, from my viewpoint, I don't know that. Are you sure it's Dasani? I mean, it could be, you know, some off-brand because I don't see Dasani. Are you sure it's Dasani? Why? Well, I can see something different. All I see is a barcode. So I'm right. I go, okay, it's half empty. It's plastic, but it's not Dasani. Are you sure? Are you sure? Would you fight and die over that?
No.
You wouldn't? Just say yes. Okay, yes. Yes, she would. Now, come here. Stand over here. Yes, for real. We're moving. Are you an introvert?
No, well, kind of.
Kind of tell. You're like embarrassed. Okay. Oh, my gosh. It's a Dasani water bottle, people. Look, it's just right here. What did it take? Perspective taking. I had to move and to listen. I had to move and to listen. And just to see. Huge, huge thing. Find somebody. This was on a Starbucks cup, so it has to be real. Find somebody you don't agree with in the slightest. Sit down across from them, ask them a question, and shut your mouth. It's impossible to speak when your mouth is closed. Just to listen. Disagreement. We have to learn how to disagree. We have to learn how to disagree as boards. We have to learn how to disagree as leadership staffs. It is all right to have disagreement. There is nowhere in the Bible that says you have to have unanimity in everything that you do. That's kind of plaguing a lot of our organizations. Because if something is uncomfortable and we have unanimity, then we just get to put a, you know, kink in the entire works and say, I don't like it. Steve's like, well, I like it. Well, I don't like it. So let's, you know, put it, you know, on, you know, just we're going to table it. We're going to talk about it later till everybody's on the same page. Learn how to disagree. Where you say this won't undo us and just say, okay, we're going to disagree about this. How do we move forward? And then our language. Language is so important. We say things that we don't know how they hurt other people. I learned this lesson years ago at Lubbock Christian University. I was an RA. I was 19 years old, and one of our young men who's on the track team came up and said, do you have a Band-Aid? And I realized he'd cut his wrist, and we had to call Dr. Estep. And long story short, he was trying to kill himself because he was a homosexual, never been in this kind of situation before as a 19-year-old RA, and so wanted to be his friend. And later, he was in the bathroom, tried to cut his throat, and, you know, it was an awful situation to go through, and I learned an awful lot. But I also learned how often we use the word gay as men. 19 years old, you know, dude, that's gay. That's gay. Because I'd just been around athletics my whole life. And I never realized that my friend, who was gay, how it came across to him. I mean, our language means a lot. Sometimes we say words, I hear this a lot in our organization, mission fit. What does that mean? You have to define those things. Our words mean something. Our mission, our values, our vision for moving forward, words mean things, and people parse them out, whether fair or not. That's just a tool we can use. And then the tool of change, learning how to change. If you learn how to drive on a dirt road, if you're going a high speed, what do you not do? Unless you want to play Dukes of Hazzard. What do you do if it's legit driving and there's a correction? What do? Slowly. Do you ever jerk the wheel? No. What happens? You lose control. We got to learn how to change as well. Those are some sharp crayons. We can get better with that. You want to take a picture of it? You can. There we go. Tell me you're done. Now, manila paper. Finding the right paper, I'll call it context. This helps us as well. It helps us as Christian organizations. We have a mission. We have a vision. Spend time on it because that is the guiding force that you can go back to and say, whether people are for or against, whatever the diverse issue we're with, this is our mission and vision, our values. Most of our boards are very diverse, I would imagine, at least in theological opinion, but some of the most diverse individuals that would not see Scripture the way that I do, we can agree on the values and we move forward. And they'll say that, as long as you stick with our values. So our mission, vision and values are a great place to color. Also our bylaws. We get so nervous and we feel like we have to make a statement. One of the things I find out, especially today, because there's millions of dollars on either side of this, is are you affirming or non-affirming? I'm for no flags. But that also means you don't have very many resources. There's millions of dollars if you put a flag on either side for your organization. Personal opinion, this is mine, I think it puts you in a ditch as far as just helping people. But you can be hospitable and draw a big net if your bylaws say, this is what we believe about marriage. This is what we believe about whatever, okay? I'm just using that as an example. Bylaws help us. The context of messaging. Know your audience. If I look at Jimmy as an athlete and say, man, I just don't think you're mission fit for our basketball team, it could be that I'm looking for a 6'9" guy. But Jimmy, how would you hear that? Why? Because he's black. Know the context of your messaging, for crying out loud. Understand your jokes. Don't be a Michael Scott. And then the context of perception. Learned this a long time ago when I was studying adolescence, and I think it's true of adults as well. Perception is reality. Perception is reality. So be very careful with the tools and then the paper you write on, because the context of perception. So something said, something's done. You get ahead of it. Learned this from a guy, man, I forgot his name. He is a producer in Hollywood, did X-Men, Star Trek, all that. And when you get a doctorate at Fuller, it's kind of cool because these people show up. You know, my professor knew this guy. And he had a outward discussion with a very openly gay director. And he's a very well-known Christian in Hollywood. He did the Left Behind movie, the first one. He said, I'll never do it again. It was an awful movie. But here he is, Christian in Hollywood. How did he go and engage it? He talked about the way this guy was treating other people. Because this guy was waiting for the producer to come in because he was going to make it a big deal. He looked at the messaging and the perception, and he went and defended the crew because of the way the director was treating them. Total perception was set. So know the paper that you're drawing on. I'll end with this. I think it's significant. Few application suggestions. These are going on all over the country, and hopefully you're probably already doing them. Form and execute a listening group. Look around you and see, okay, is it gender? Is it even same sex? What do you need to know about that group? Is it ethnicity? Is it the poor? Is it the rich? Is it a different denomination? Okay. Work towards your leadership reflecting the diversity of your context. We are very white in this room. Okay. We have some gender difference, which is good, but we need to look more colored. Have the hard discussion. Support in your language, official and unofficial. The amazing thing is what you speak in a boardroom. Have you realized it gets out to the populace? Again, working with athletes, working with coaches, they're a gossip group, almost as bad as youth ministers, okay? They'll talk about everything. So have hard discussions, support in your language, official and unofficial, but also with love. Be sure that they know the love, they know the love, they know the love, even in your opposition to whatever view you're dealing with. That's easier said than done, right? And the last thing is to move forward. Just move forward. Do something. Do something.